this stuff just to get it out there. And yeah, just thank you for that. $1,077. For those that don't know, like, you have two chances here. This one, $1,077.
Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org is the website. Support RBN. A lot of hosts with a lot of different opinions over here, and nobody's corralled into saying what anybody else wants to say, and that's the way it is, and that's a good thing. A lot going on. The phone lines are going to be open tonight. 1-800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443. I know people probably want to talk about Le Pen and Maricon, Macron, the gay drug seeker with the 60-year-old wife and the whole crap storm over there. You know, all these leaks coming out on Maricon, Macron. Very interesting. I wanted to cover this, though. This is breaking on a few different sites. The Battle of New Orleans and Oath Keepers and Stuart Rhodes, who I've interviewed on this program way back when Ferguson was. That's kind of when I came on the air, and it wasn't because of that. I was working, trying to get on RBN at that time with one of the old guys kind of doing programming for John, who ended up in a big drama thing with John back in 2014. But so, you know, I've been listening to Dr. Duke's program about this New Orleans thing and the cultural overwrite kind of black communist and, you know, your typical leftist mob wanting to take down these monuments and put them elsewhere, so taking them out of the public square. And I don't like the idea. I think you're removing your history and your landmarks and these things that make people remember about history. And you could, you know, the war of northern aggression is what they call it in the South. And I grew up kind of right here on the border of the two. If you look at the history of St. Louis and Missouri and why it's called the Show Me State, and it's a very sordid and crazy history when you look at this thing, the war between the states and so forth. And so now we're seeing, you know, it's where's Jeff Sessions and all this? And I know that they're probably going to defer and say this is a state matter. And where's Trump? Where is, you know, it seems like there's quite a bit of silence on some of these issues and the targeting of alternative media people, YouTubers, and all this kind of weird thing. And look at the alternative. If, okay, let's say that Hillary was the president, what kind of machinations would we be seeing? And so, you know, these things are kind of interesting to think about, because every, you know, when you're looking at these horror stories of what the Clinton crime family, subsidiary of the Bush crime family presidency, would look like versus what we're seeing now. And I've got an interesting article to try to get into later, like this supposed dust up between Ronald Lauder and Sheldon Adelson over the future of the Middle East and what it's going to look like. And they're trying to paint the picture that Adelson's the hardliner Likudnik and Lauder is more cozy with Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority. And those of us that have looked into 9/11 know that Lauder was one of the big guys involved in the transfer of the buildings from the Port Authority and all that stuff. And so it's very interesting to watch how the Times of Israel tries to make it seem like these two are at opposite sides of the spectrum, when, let's just say, it's theatrical. A lot of people would knee-jerk and say that. But at the same time, I realize the more I dig and the more I realize that there truly are some factions, even like in the Jewish community or an organization the size of Rome, the Vatican, about these faction wars. And even in the Jesuit order itself, you see some of these guys, you know, they're hardcore, just like liberation theology Marxists, all the way to guys that are more, let's say, hardcore, you know, nationalist, Christian defense, you know, open warfare against the enemies of the church and so forth. And so, and you could say in a sort of an intellectually lazy sort of way, oh, this is all just theater for the goy, and move on, pay attention to something else. You know, and you guys are all going to have to kind of make those decisions for yourself, because it gets murky. And I know I'm along the protocols here, and I'm on protocol 18. You know, and I was thinking about this, people that want to go off on those of us that look into kind of the underbelly of Rome and especially the Jesuit order and so forth. The very protocols of Zion, which I read some weeks back, actually mentioned the Jesuits as a counter force. And really one of the only force that I see mentioned throughout the protocols that the elders of Zion even consider looking at or mentioning. And so those folks out here that want to talk smack, that anybody that looks into the papal power structure as somehow an agent of some sort or something like that, oh, I have to ask you the question, why are the Jesuits mentioned in the protocols of Zion if they're just some nice bunch of guys in a priestly order, and they run universities and schools and help the poor, but they're not involved in, let's say, statecraft and political skullduggery? And you know, you got to really thank some of the guys from the 1800s that really did the heavy lifting on the machinations of the Jesuit order. And so I just thought I would throw that in there to remind people that the protocols, number one, they used the Jesuits as a formidable foe. They mentioned them. And number two, those that wrote, and as I read last week, those that wrote Protocol 17, they said that the destruction of the church is one of their major objectives of the Elders of Zion. And number three, if you get into Theodore Herzl, really, who a lot of people connect to the protocols themselves, the World Zionist Congress, 1897 Basel, which I've covered ad nauseum, he said that he was going, that anti-Semites, as he called them, or basically people that are critiquing Jewish power and Jewish machinations on the world stage, that a good portion of them would be their best friends. And so you look at some of the more over-the-top people out here in this kind of alternative media sectors, or whatever you want to call it, alt-right, pro-white, all these people, and they're so over-the-top with it and everything else, you have to realize these are some of the very same people that the people that inspired and wrote the protocols that said that they would be their best friends. And so the really kind of sober and methodical researchers like Michael Hoffman II or Dr. E. Michael Jones, or you know, some of these other writers who really approach it from a classy and intellectual breakdown of people's machinations, and they don't throw epithets around, and they don't get into little squabbles with people that amount to nothing. These are the people I've really been looking at and saying, this is really, for me, as somebody that's approaching 50 years old, these are the people that I look to for analysis and ideas. And some of these young firebrands out here that like to run their mouths and do all these things, these are really the people that probably are too dense to realize that they're the guys that wrote the protocols, and Theodore Herzl and these guys, they're the ones that they said would be their best friends, because you're basically doing the work for them by your buffoonish actions on the internet behind microphones and some of this other stuff. And so, I had to realize that I've got to move in a more sophisticated view here. And I had to really look at things in a spiritual way and say, look, do I believe that every person that grew up in a Jewish household, even more, one of the more virulent Jewish households, is there something genetic about them that makes them, you know, like the whole story about Eve and Lucifer, Satan having sex, and then this is the producer of Cain, and then and from then on, the, you know, down the line, the two seed line thing, and how far does the two seed line thing go, and all that stuff, where I had to really look at it and be like, is it ideology here that makes people do toxic things on top of spiritual corruption and all those things? And then you got to look at the genetic angle. And I really had to look at it like this. The spiritual corruption, how does that boil over into your genetics and how you pass that down through the generations? And, you know, Brother Nathaniel has talked about this, the weight of basically the deicide on people and how it affects genetic things. And, you know, this guy that writes for Veterans Today, Jonas Alexis, a black guy who I read his stuff quite a bit, he's along there with, you know, Dr. E. Michael Jones and Hoffman and these guys, where people that want to blanketly say just because somebody is of this ethnic group or this kind of religious ideology that somehow automatically carte blanche that they're genetically, you know, predisposed to doing evil, let's say, or predisposed to anti-Gentilism, you know, something like that. That's a stretch for me, But I know a lot of the listeners of RBN, some of them have that viewpoint. And, you know, I'm not telling you not to have your viewpoint. I just say this. This show and the way I'm doing things is to try to look at it in a, both an intellectual, spiritual, and how that affects genetics. And not necessarily as people's genetics from the time they come out of the womb automatically make them, you know, or they're going to be an evil person. But I know genetics are a powerful factor. People that, you know, raise a child from in a completely different environment from the one that they would be raised in, sometimes this child ends up doing the very same actions, and this person was raised, and it was completely, you know, nurture was completely giving them all the advantages, but they still, something in the nature makes them do things. And I know that that's a very powerful reality. But is it all powerful? It's almost like people want to squeeze the spiritual out of it and say, their genetics, it just, they're already predisposed, and the power of God, the creator of the universe, nothing's ever going to make them change or whatever. And so I think that's a rather dangerous viewpoint. And that's really a Talmudic viewpoint, where you get into the Chabad sect and some of these other kind of Hasidic sects, where they say anybody that's a Gentile is automatically evil. And so by me moving to a default saying anybody in that sector is automatically evil, I'm just responding tit for tat. And I don't know if I'm not completely comfortable with that. And I just had to get that out there, because it's been coming up in my psyche and in my kind of contemplations about how does this all related, and how does it, you know, filter off into my big picture about all this. And you don't have to agree. I'm not some person that says you have to agree with me, or you know, we can't exchange ideas. I'm not that type of person. There are people out here that are them types of people, and that's why, you know, you see all this drama all over the place in various portions of alternative media, because everybody thinks they're right, and anybody that doesn't think the same way as them, well, they're useless trash and to be jettisoned, you know, out of the, you know, rear end of humanity. And so just wanted to get to that. Let's see here. Back to this New Orleans thing, okay? So, Battle of New Orleans, Oath Keepers sided with Antifa against Southerners, and now other websites, basically, this whole thing with, you know, the defense of Confederate monuments, I don't know why that the Oath Keepers would side with the, you know, these types. Now, this could be, I'm seeing this on numerous websites, though, and so I haven't been affiliated with Oath Keepers from some time. There's just some things about them that I really respect, some things about them, but I realize this too, that they're very, let's say, conventional with World War II history, and they don't like to look at things in a revisionist capacity. And so that's where I kind of, with them, and they, it's almost like an SJW, some of their racial, there's not very much racial realism with Oath Keepers, and so they really want to defend kind of like this multicultural agenda, kind of like the new military agenda, where we have a lot of people across all different racial spectrums. They don't want to defend basically white or European interests at all, and I think that's silly, because all of us are seeing this squeeze by the mass media and the rest of it in religious institutions, which are, you know, like Presbyterian Church or a good portion of Catholicism's, it's gotten kind of anti-white, And of course, the Jewish community has been virulently anti-white. Now, there are some spots to where members of the Jewish community are actually seeing the writing on the wall, like Michael Savage, David Horowitz, Mark Levin, and some of those figures on the right. They're actually calling out some of the anti-white sentiments in their own community, but in the wider, basically, Marxist, leftist, you know, sphere that we're seeing operating out here. And so it's about to get very ugly in New Orleans, May 7th. Antifa to face off with Black Patriots and Oath Keepers in the Battle of New Orleans. So this one's saying that Antifa, you know, is going to face off with some of, you know, there is this contingent of Black Americans in the South that do kind of stick up for Southern heritage and so forth and so on. And remember back right when the Ferguson thing was going down, but some of the other kind of racial psyops were going down, there was this Black guy, a real kind of Confederate defender. He was murdered, right? This was probably 2.5 years ago, and I'm sure many of you remember this. Council of Conservative Citizens and some of those guys reported on that basically this guy had been killed probably by some, you know, thug types that just couldn't understand a Black guy standing for Southern Confederate heritage. And so I that popped into my head today when I saw these kind of Black guys standing with some of the folks with the Confederate flags and some of that stuff. So it's a real weird mixed bag here when you're looking at this cultural overwrite, this Marxist attempt to erase things out of the history. All right. Now, and I know we should be coming up on a break in a second. I don't know why we didn't hit one, but Pope Francis, I'm going to move on. He gave a TED talk. All right. And so he, you know, his message of people of all faiths about solidarity, this multicultural Pope, anti-Pope, almost a lot of the traditionalist Catholic community considers Francis an anti-Pope, okay? And so this is just some of his stuff. A single individual is enough for hope to exist, and that individual can be you. And he said in an 18-minute video in Italian, okay, let us help each other all together to remember that the other is not a statistic or a number, he said. We all need each other. And what really gets me is this, he's, you know, it really focusing on this refugee, a cultural invader, economic migrant thing. And I get so sick of people saying Syrian refugees when a large portion of these people all throughout Europe are African, coming from countries, and they're just migrants. They're looking for stuff. So the arrangement was planned a year in advance and included several trips to Rome. And this is by the TED people, employing 40 TED translators who worked to post the Pope's message with subtitles in 20 different languages. At a certain point, nearly 80 people across our team and in Vatican City were aware of the talk, but we managed to keep it confidential until the moment we unveiled it at TED 2017, said Bruno Giussiani, TED's internal curator. The Pope planned his own message, but included initial input from TED curators to better understand the nature of the TED community. And so basically, a single individual is enough for hope to exist, and that individual can be you, and then there will be another you, and another you, and it turns out into an us. And so, does hope begin when we have an us? No, hope began with one you. When there is an us, there begins a revolution. And so more revolutionary kind of talk. Now, I wanted to get into this. Why? Because people don't, they want to poo-poo the power of Rome and the Vatican and this occupied, eclipsed institution. So they did several trips to Rome, employed 40 TED translators, okay? 20 different languages they post this thing. But people want to tell me, oh, the papacy's, it's nothing. The basically kosher nostra, it's all powerful. The papacy, I mean, okay, find me a rabbi, okay? Find me a rabbi that the TED people would make several trips to, employing 40 of them and doing it into 20 languages, okay? People, see, they don't look at things in the proper perspective. Now, does Rothschild control Rome, or does Rome control Rothschild? Let's take a step back from that real quick, and then just look at the massive scope of this organization. And in Islam, too, you got a 1-point-some-odd billion Muslims across a few different spectrums, but there's around a billion and some change Catholics. And then you got the rest of the Christian community or church. And so the wealth, the land owning, all these churches across the world. I mean, one of the biggest landowners in the United States is Rome. Okay, all these. Look at St. Louis. All the properties the papacy owns. But people don't want to look at it, and they want to just say that Rome's irrelevant, and they really haven't looked into who crafted the European Union, the documents, and everything else, where these things were signed, these treaties, and so forth and so on, and then they want to poo-poo the power. You know, Rome having, and the Knights of Malta both having observer status at the UN and everything else. So back to, does Rothschild control Rome, or does Rome control Rothschild, and then therefore the rest of the kosher mafia? And you could argue this one all day, and I watch the people argue it almost on a daily basis, the various researchers that always want to get into this. But for people to say, the people that cover these issues, they're all, you know, shills or compromised or something of this nature. So it's just silly for people that consider themselves researchers to talk like that. Now, and I'm going to cover some of this on the other side. Alongside Catholic leaders, President Trump signs executive order on religious liberty and health care. Okay, so I'm sure most of you have seen Jerry Falwell Jr., Pastor Robert Jeffress. There's a whole bunch of people really singing the praises of Trump signing this executive order basically to back the IRS off of religious organizations and political involvement. You know, Lyndon Baines Johnson was when this really, the IRS ratcheted up into the 501c3 thing and basically saying, if you're a religious organization and you get into politics, that somehow, you know, you're violating your 501c3, so stay out of politics. But if you've even paid basic attention, you'll see that the left and the Democratic Party has always violated this, and it's always been selectively enforced against conservatives and basically fundamentalist Christians and Catholics and so forth that really wanted to stay and maintain a close-knit as to the principles. Some of these kind of Marxist black churches, you'll always see Bill Clinton and Obama. I remember them when they've always ran openly, being invited to and doing political rallies in some of these big AME churches and so forth, where the IRS never came down on them. But with the IRS, we know who controls the IRS, basically the money changer faction. They were always weaponized against basically people on the right side of the political spectrum. And that's just plain as day. People have been talking about this for decades, about the selective enforcement against conservatives by the IRS. And Obama really took it to a new level. Eric Holder, Obama, Loretta Lynch, and then the Lois Lerner and the IRS people. They really took it hard to libertarians and conservatives. Mr. Producer, are we coming up on a break? Or are we still going? All right. I'm not hearing from the producer. I hope I'm on. The phone lines are open, 1-800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443. So President Trump signed an executive order on Thursday that instructs the IRS not to enforce a rule that bars churches from engaging in partisan politics and addresses concerns from some Catholic organizations about rules in the Affordable Care Act regarding contraception coverage. Now, here's where I'm kind of at with this. This is what's kind of weird, is think about all the other religious organizations now, the Wicca types, Islamic, especially since we've taken in so many Islamic refugees, immigrants, migrants, jihadists, you know, immigrant, you know, jihad, basically, just by the numbers, secretly having your multiple wives, having multiple kids in a country where that's illegal, but basically it's not going to be enforced. So now, by doing this and really kind of pulling the 501c3 thing, and basically a lot of the pastors of conservative churches are kind of gleeful, is this going to be a double-edged sword, and you're going to see all these other organizations and other religious people get even more involved? And so it's always been a mixed bag. Like I said, selective enforcement. The left has always gotten away, had cover, just like they get away with terror, crime, and everything else. The Marxists are always covered for because they're the favorable criminal in the eyes of this Marxist government, and basically hold up the Communist Manifesto and the Constitution of the United States, hold them up next to each other, and you'll see we've been steadily sailing left right into Marxism under the cover of flowery language, brainwashing in the academic circles of our kids, to where now they think, they're beating people with bike locks at free speech rallies. I mean, this is where we're at. We're at a Bolshevik moment in time here where they want to take us into Red Terror. And I've said this for a long time. Before the signing, this is on America Magazine, the Jesuits magazine. Before the signing ceremony at the White House Rose Garden, Mr. Trump was scheduled to meet in the Oval Office with Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and Cardinal Daniel Wuerl, Archbishop of Washington, D.C. They were also at the signing ceremony, along with other Catholic leaders, including Joe Cella, head of the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast, and an early supporter of Mr. Trump, and members of the Little Sisters of the Poor. The meeting and signing ceremony marked the National Day of Prayer. Mr. Trump offered remarks during the ceremony, thanking religious leaders for joining him in the Rose Garden. It's a beautiful thing to see these three faith leaders from three very different faith traditions come together and lift up our nation in prayer. Not only are we a nation of faith, we are a nation of tolerance. Mr. Trump said his executive order was meant to defend the freedom of religion and speech in America. No American should be forced to choose between the dictates of the federal government and the tenets of their faith, he said. And you'll remember the whole Hobby Lobby thing, and then the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and some of the Catholic organizations basically mandating that they needed to give birth control to their employees as part of the insurance mandate and all this stuff. Where would we be if the other party that was running was involved? It's hard to really hypothesize about where people like, you know, Alex Jones would be if Hillary had won, or Hannity, or a Breitbart, let's say, or any of the hardcore kind of websites. Here we go to the break. Was that a break, Mr. Producer?
Down Hollywood Road, yeah, I come so far in the search for Bella Lugosi.
attacks on your religious liberty. So this could turn out to be a mixed bag, or it could turn out to be a positive. I'm not willing to, there's some people that will never say anything positive about the president. He could do, some really, really good things. And there's people out here that are saying that the president, is a complete POS. He's gonna not do anything positive, and he's just a kosher Nostra sycophant and blah blah blah. Well, those are the type of people that don't think in a tactical fashion. They don't think methodically. They like simplicity, in their life. Trump's a shill. Good enough. Be done with it. Let's move on. And then that's what a lot of people do, and I'm just not that simple of a person. Okay, so I wanted to cover this real quick. Unheard of, and this is Shubat talking this, unheard of and unthinkable. Turkey reveals that Hamas just ditched the Muslim Brotherhood and is ready to recognize Israel. So this is by Waleed Shubat. I thought this was interesting. I'm screwing around, looking around for articles today for the show. If you plug Hamas will recognize Israel on Google, the only hit you will get is from Shubat.com. You will not get anyone in the world making such a prediction. It was considered impossible to even fathom such an idea that Hamas will recognize Israel. And today we read the headlines from Turkey stating the last support in the Middle East for the Muslim Brotherhood ended on May 2nd. Hamas leader Khaled Mashal personally declared the new policy document of his organization, announcing that it's not a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood anymore. He also declared that Hamas would form better relations with Egypt and other Muslim countries that have problems with the Muslim Brotherhood. It also gave a message that it could live together with Israel. Live together with Israel. Mind you, our prediction is from as far back as May 25th, 2011, 6 years ago, at a time that such an idea would be considered impossible. Yet our prediction gained us a miserable one Facebook share with zero comments. 6 years ago, we stated, on May 19th, Waleed did radio interview with Simon Conway, Drive Time Talk Show in Des Moines, Iowa. Listen to above the entire interview. In this interview, Waleed predicts that Hamas will recognize Israel because Turkey will arrange and pressure Hamas to do so. This will be a ruse by both Turkey and Hamas to help the world pressure Israel to divide the land, and will lead to the covenant of death mentioned in Isaiah 28. Now, as if you believe that this modern nation state of Israel is the prophesied kind of entity for this to be true, which God will not let stand. Predicting the exact time frame is not productive, but we will believe that this treaty will be arranged over the next 2 to 5 years, possibly sooner. And so that's interesting that basically years ago that, Shubat predicted that. My Skype's acted up. I can't see my screen. So let's see here. This was interesting. Mr. Producer, get clip 4 ready. No, make that clip 5 about the IRS and the churches. Get clip 5 ready. And just give me a shout in the ear when you got it ready. So, all right, go ahead and play clip 5, Mr. Producer.
Snarky Acton checking in. Trigger warning, if images of Christians being crucified are going to bother you, then please don't watch this video. Otherwise, welcome back to our hypothetical and theoretical analysis of the fake, hoax, scripted news media events that make up your two-dimensional synthetic reality. We call it the reality box, and in today's reality box, we know that the president of China, Mr. 11, X1, or Xi, President Xi, Donald Trump's new friend, quote, he's my friend. He's a total friend. I love this guy. He loves my cake. total friend, and I eat cake with him, unquote. So we know the dumpster just thinks China's the greatest thing. Because when President Xi, X111, went to Davos, which is the International World Economic Council, President Xi said to Davos, I will get Donald Trump, I will get the United States in line. And he certainly has, because he's whispered into Donald Trump's ear, and let's not forget that for 3 hours, Donald Trump and President Xi were alone at Mar-a-Lago. No aides, no ambassadors. I wonder what they talked about. Well, the subservient Donald Trump was getting his orders from the dominant President Xi. I mean, that's openly admitted. So they devised a plan that the dumpster could carry out, meaning let's bait the Christians into this trap and tell them, hey, I'm going to tell the IRS to relax the enforcement of the law. I'm not going to get rid of the law. I'm going to tell them to relax enforcement on it. Let me use an analogy. It's like if the dumpster came out and said, I'm telling the IRS to relax enforcement with the ATF. If you want to make sawed-off shotguns, go ahead. Be my guest. Well, that's wonderful until another regime takes over. Then they could immediately go round everybody up that has a sawed-off shotgun. It's a really nice way to bait everybody into a trap. So that's what this executive order is all about to the IRS. Don't enforce on the churches the prohibition against political activities. I don't want it enforced. Let me rephrase that. I don't want this enforced. It's a total disaster. Total disaster. So basically what's going to happen is all these poor misguided churches that are not paying taxes, they're tax subsidized by the American voter, the American taxpayer. I mean, they get free everything. I mean, they don't pay 30-35% in taxes, so that's a lot of money in their pocket. Well, guess what? Now they can engage in political activity. Why? Well, the Republicans and the rich and the super rich, the billionaires, the one percenters, they need a rear guard. They need someone that can be attacked so that they can take away that onerous 3% capital gains tax, which they have to pay, which was funding Obamacare. That's the reason why these 24 million people lost their insurance, by the way, just as a footnote, because the super rich don't want to pay that 3% extra on capital gains tax. So bye-bye, you poor people, no more health care for you. So eventually people are going to get outraged, people are going to get upset, and the pitchforks are going to come out, the mobs are going to come out, and they're going to be looking for people to throw under the bus. Well, here you go. Throw the churches under the bus, because this gives the churches about 2.5-3 years to engage in political activity, thinking they got a green light from the president, who's not abolishing the law. He's telling an enforcement agency, don't really enforce this law, which is probably an illegal executive order. But guess what? The churches are going to go out, and they're going to start engaging in political activity. They're going to go on the whole counter-LGBT, counter-gay, counter-abortion, counter-this, counter-that, which is fine, I get it. But really, when it comes to political activity, they should throttle back slightly, because they are being subsidized by the American taxpayer. Well, not anymore. They're going to go full tilt. That's the perfect opportunity for everyone in the nation to get mad at the churches for their political causes. Meanwhile, the super rich get to pocket that 3% capital gains tax that's been abolished.
You could stop
meaning
it there.
That's close to $1 trillion.
Now, I don't necessarily agree with all of what Acton's saying, but I wanted to play that for the angle of basically you're not going to enforce it. Now, I doubt that Congress, I can't recall, and I'm going off the top of my head, but I don't think Congress did that. I think this was an executive action in itself, the whole 501c3 and, the religious, designation for these entities, and basically saying you're not allowed to do political anything. But like I was saying, it's always been selectively enforced. The left has always had its people in the churches constantly. It's basically been a bludgeon against conservatism, always selectively enforced. And so just wanted to throw that out there. And sorry to the callers. I couldn't get my screen up, and I didn't know you guys were there. My computer started acting silly. Let's take Dave in Wisconsin. We got Dave.
Thank you, Robert. I got to say, I was listening to a couple of shows recently today and last couple of days where they were talking about the attack on the U.S. Liberty.
Yeah.
You know, and they were talking about Phil Turney and, you know, how Israel was behind his attacks on the U.S. Liberty.
Yeah.
And at the same time, these guys who are doing this are praising Donald Trump. And the funny thing, they don't seem to get it, is that Donald Trump will tell you that the attack on the U.S. Liberty was nothing but an unfortunate accident. He will never blame Israel for the attack on the U.S. Liberty.
You know, and that's what you know what kills me, though. It's like I think enough years have went by to where I don't know why that basically a guy like Trump couldn't say, you know, it's like none of those guys are in the power structure that probably ordered that. And then, you know, there were elements in, you know, you got to realize with something like this hit on the USS Liberty, the city of London and the money changer gang basically ordered their lackeys down there in Israel to do it. I mean, because Israel's a good source to do false flags. They got taught everything they ever wanted to learn from, you know, various intelligence agencies that they had already populated. And so when you look at a false flag like the USS Liberty against the United States to pull us into the war in the Middle East and so forth, you know, you got to realize that you know, the Israelis being tapped to do the hit, it actually came out of London, you know, the city of London, where these guys, the real controllers of Israel, sit. And so,
who are these real controllers of Israel in London who ordered the attack on the U.S. Liberty?
Well, the Rothschilds, of course.
Idiot. Sir, you're an idiot. You're a fool.
Really? So
Yes.
You want to tell me that Rothschild Boulevard in Israel, all that money that they've dumped in, they built the Supreme Court building? You mean to tell
Israel
me?
You think Israel takes orders from some guy in London? You're an idiot. You're just stupid.
Oh, really? So you're telling me that the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, doesn't get his marching orders from the central bankers?
Benjamin Netanyahu does not get ordered around by Gentiles in London. No, you're an idiot. You're a fool.
The Rothschilds aren't Gentiles. They're Jewish.
Okay, tell me the name of the Rothschild who ordered... What's the first name of the Rothschild who ordered the attack on the USS Liberty?
The one that was alive at the time?
You don't know what you're talking about. You're reading silly websites, conspiracy theories, and you think it's all controlled by the Vatican and this kind of nonsense?
It's a clear case. I give people the choice to believe what they want, but I say this, do the Rothschilds control the Vatican or the Vatican control the Rothschild? I just said that earlier if you were even listening. Do you listen?
The Vatican does not control Israel. Don't be an idiot.
I mean, why are you calling me names? I mean, guys like you, you call in and you call people names, but I mean, you know, you've got your opinion and I've got mine. Have a nice night.
Used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
You know, a while back, I probably would have flew off the handle with that guy. But, you know, I've gotten a lot, you know, more diplomatic in these days. But, yeah, I mean, you know, look, I personally think that the Israeli state is an outpost for basically organized crime. And I don't think the prime minister of the country, I think he answers to higher levels. And, of course, the Rothschild family being one of them. Rothschild Boulevard, they built the Supreme Court building, all the money they've dumped into it, and all the gazillionaires worldwide that don't happen to live there but seem to somehow impacting Sheldon Adelson's another one of these guys, impacting Israeli policy from afar. And so, you know, that's just the way I see it. And then if you think I'm an idiot, Dave, Turn the radio off. Don't listen to my program anymore. I don't need you. I don't get paid doing this. I do this because I like it. So if you like doing that, you know, calling people names and the rest of it, go for it. But whatever. Let's take Mike in Kentucky. Mike, how's it going, man?
Yeah, you should consider that a heck of a compliment one way or another that you're getting those type of callers because you're reaching out beyond the patriot audience or the a lot of the more friendly callers that you hear from all the time on RBN that get what's going on. I think there's a lot of callers that are very, very well informed. It's obvious that guy's ignorant. He doesn't know about the 130-40-year plan to bring about the state of Israel that involved the Rothschilds. You go back and look at the, I think it's called the Jewish Encyclopedia from like 1912 or something in there, and it says the banker, the Vatican banker, the keeper of the papal treasure is the Rothschilds. They're bragging about it.
I mean,
the plans to finance Hitler and the war against Germany was declared by World Jewry in 1933 before there was a war against Germany by anybody else declared in New York. But is that the break music coming up?
No, we got a couple minutes.
Well, I was just going to say, any good American that is trying to understand where we're at and how we got here, Charlie Wilson's War, a movie with Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks, I about fell off my couch. I had a special order of this movie. It was nowhere to be found in my hometown in the theaters. Or in the, you know, at the time, you could still go buy DVDs in a movie store, you know, a media outlet store. I had a special order of the thing, paid like $17.98 for it. There's a scene in there, you can see a clip of it if you don't want to watch the whole thing, where Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks are talking in the bathtub, getting drowned out. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just hold on through the top of the hour break.
Hi, folks. Let's wind the clocks back 60 years. Food was different. Food provided health and nutrition, and using supplements was minimal. Unfortunately, now we have chemicals, GMOs, herbicides, and pesticides that can be quite lethal in the name of our food supply and, of course, the ever-loving dollar. Supplementing our diets can be very important to stay healthy. Cleansing from daily intruders to the body might be critical. Live strong and take charge. Log on to GetTheTea.com. Our herbal tea is a great way to cleanse from intruders. Our supplements is a great way to maintain and improve your health. When your health is not up to par, go to GetTheTea.com. No GMOs, no fillers, and organic. And very helpful in keeping you at the top of your game. Life is too short to feel, you know what I mean. Stay in the game. At the top of your game with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Again, GetTheTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Truth.
Through these eyes, I've seen love and I've seen hate. I've seen the